And, you know, once we start to really strip ourselves away from the projections and understand, like, what does it mean to be a woman? Oh, it just means to be me, fully me.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's like a profound first insight to build upon.
This is the Feminine Power Podcast, where we explore modern knowledge and ancient wisdom to support women in finding answers to their deepest longings and unlocking their true power. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, and together with genuine experts in the fields of intimacy, tantra, sexual energy, women's health and wellness, relationships, and human potential, we explore how to find our truths and connect deeply with our bodies, utilizing all the natural tools that help us thrive and create more love and peace in this world. This podcast is about rising above, taking responsibility for our own empowerment, breaking free from old conditioning and outdated projections. To find out more about the Feel membership that offers to take this knowledge into your life through daily embodiment practices, check this podcast description. In this episode, I speak to Sassy Roy, an impressive leader, impact entrepreneur, and the founder of wellness companies Our Highest Mantra and Pirouz. I invited her to this podcast because of her powerful voice and her genuine desire to elevate people and support them in finding their truth. With this episode, I hope to inspire more women to truly step into their power and pave the way for a better future. Embrace their inner strength and truly be in service in their own unique ways. In this episode, we speak a lot about finding Dharma, or purpose, overcoming limiting beliefs, breaking out of projections and toxic stories around being a woman, and finding our own truth.
Wow, where do we start? I'm actually still trying to figure out the full answer to that. I think every day is where do we all really come from, right? So I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me on here. My background is I was born and raised in New York City. I was born in a family that practiced Hinduism, but it was nothing that I actually really got into until later on in life. And so spirituality has always been a big part of my life, but it's something that I really began to understand later. Early on in my professional career, I went into the world of psychology, marketing, and really connecting with people. I was always very interested and curious about people, which I think inherently is kind of the basis of spirituality, is just this forever curiosity. So I went into, you know, that world, and then from there went into management consultancy, worked at Neuro Leadership and a few other places, and you know, built teams in terms of, you know, sales verticals and all of this. So I've always done things in terms of like leadership. And then from that, kind of navigated outside of the corporate world just about a year ago and started to really, really dive into what my own mission was. And that kind of brings me here today, where I've been essentially working on myself or evolving, walking through this human experience for, you know, my entire life. And now I'm finally really sharing more about the story, about, you know, my mission, which really has to do with bridging people together. And I'm very, very protective, I feel, over our connection to each other as a humanity. And I think that right now it's just, you know, a fantastic time to bring that back into the forefront. So, you know, when people ask me like what my story is, I don't usually like to get into just all of the milestones. But technically speaking, you know, my background is in psychology, neuroscience, leadership, and building culture. And what I want to do with that is really bring people together and ultimately, you know, help people discover their own dharma, their own soul's purpose, to then be able to take action on it. You know, we're in this era right now of people activating. Everyone's kind of activating and recognizing what it is that they really are here to do. And so, you know, it all comes at a timely point right now. So, you know, my background is born in New York City, but really a lot of my story stems from my upbringing you know, growing up in a South Asian household to and being raised by a woman with a disability. So my mom and my father were always working, and my older sister was the one who really take care of me and took care of me. And she was born with a lot of medical conditions. And through the experience of seeing my sister, you know, and going with her in and out of hospitals and going through, you know, mental health crisis with her, going through her, you know, kidney transplant surgery, going through the kind of the healthcare system, seeing her conquer those over and over again, I always consider her to be my first guru. And so a lot of my kind of wisdom and, you know, what I feel is the foundation of myself stems from my sister.
You know, you've just touched upon Dharma, and I do understand that a lot of people don't necessarily know this word. If you could give a little definition of Dharma for those who don't know this term.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Dharma is another way of saying your purpose, your mission, your soul's purpose, which is such a daunting term. I mean, it sounds so big, right? It sounds so grand. It sounds like it has to be this thing that kind of smacks you in the face. And it's like, oh, that's my purpose, right? So how does one get in touch with their Dharma, you know, or their soul's purpose? Well, a lot of it really has to do with what are the things that bring you joy? Like, what is the actual thing that really makes your soul sing? And if I look back at my actual milestone and kind of career, and I know that I really didn't give an answer for that, but milestone-wise, okay, so I've built, you know, 1,000-person global teams. I've helped to build, you know, $2 billion companies, right? I've helped to do a lot of these amazing things. I was, but why? So what was it? Because I wasn't chasing necessarily the actual role. I wasn't like, okay, I'm meant to be, you know, the head of sales at this place, or to build a company to this dollar amount, or any of that, right? So what was it that I was doing to get there? And all of those qualities, when I looked at them, okay, they had to do with people. So leadership came into place. Okay, but was it just being a leader? No, not necessarily. Because when you dig into that, being a leader is not even about you. It's about the people that you cultivate, and it's about what you and the people together can do, right? So that is what I really liked. And so really kind of stripping down to things, like the actual milestone and the things I've done, the roles that I've played, and then looking at what was the energy and what were the actual things that I was doing to make myself feel that joy. That's how I discovered my Dharma is. So you have to really strip the action and strip the role. When you strip yourself of the activity or strip yourself from the actual role, title, and you look at what were you feeling and what were the things that made you feel a certain way? And you look at it and you say, okay, wow. So me being with people, cultivating people, building synergy, helping people come together, that made me give off this energy into the world that made me feel high, right? Like I felt this high vibration. That's how I ended up like backing into what my Dharma was, because that's what we're supposed to do here, right? The whole, like we're an energy system and we're a part of this entire collective, which really makes us part of this one energy collective. And our Dharma is simply to continue to give back to that energy collective in the way that makes us the highest vibration. So in me and my highest vibration was cultivating people, you know, teamwork, groups, ushering in something bigger with a group. And so that's how I backed into, okay, I have to do more things like that. And that is actually my Dharma, not a certain title, not a certain role.
Yeah. And right now we live in at a very interesting time when I feel like only now, like in the last few years, we are waking up to the fact that indeed maybe we can create more value and live not only more, you know, fun and pleasurable lives, but also really produce value and give back to the world if we follow something that we love. While 20 years ago, like for my parents' generation, Of course, in some parts of the world more than others, they had a certain framework. You have to be a lawyer, a doctor, a teacher, and economist, and this is what you have to become. And if you don't, if you choose to be to just follow whatever you want to do, you will not succeed in life. Like a lot of people of that generation, unfortunately, had that mindset.
Right.
And therefore, right now, for some people, it's still difficult to switch to that fact that if you actually discover what it is that you want and love and what drives you truly, that might be your path towards real success in many terms. And I wonder, is there any way you could inspire people to find that dharma, even if they have hesitation, whether it's like a right or wrong thing to do, or the fear, or they know they have the fear because it's been taught to them by society or parents or culture or anything, and they still want to discover it. But yeah, there is this limitation.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point, right? Which is a lot of these projections, we kind of go back to projections, right? You brought up family, culture. I mean, there's definitely a lot of that in every culture. Every single culture has its own set of cultural projections when it comes to career or what the word successful really looks like and means. And we have to understand that those projections all came from certain places. They came from a place of awareness that was influenced by their reality. So if we think back to, you know, even I'll use my parents as an example, Indian background. A lot of them are very similar to a lot of other cultures. It's like, you're either going to be a doctor, or you're going to be this, you're going to be that, right? And but if I look back and think about where they came from, well, that was one of their only ways to really achieve stability, or what they thought was stability. And for them, it had less to do with what your dharma was and more to do with just be stable, just have money, just have everything that you need taken care of, and then you'll be happy. Don't really worry about happiness, just be taken care of. And that comes from a time period of what was going on. You know, there's all these different eras. And these different eras are also, we can even look back astrologically and see what was happening then. You know, what was the generation going through at that time? And each generation had its own set of reality and priority. And that's changing a lot now. Like, we're in the age of Aquarius, like we've shifted a lot, where we're kind of now going back to this place of spirituality, fluidity, connecting with something deeper, connecting to the greater. That was not the case even 50 years ago, right? We were still kind of focused as a culture on certain rigid milestone things. So we've been shifting out of a more kind of 3D or more kind of physical world reality and going more and more into this abstract world. So that's my comment for when we deal with projections, which is normal. It's part of the human experience, is for us to deal with what other people want us to do. And then we have to sit with it to then come to terms with what is us, right? What do I want? That's part of the process. So if that's an experience that someone's feeling, then they're on track. You know, you're on track. Like, this, it's part of the process. You got to just keep walking it, right? And then you kind of go into, okay, now because of all these projections, I have this fear of deviating off path or off somebody else's path, right? I have this feeling of I want to do this, or maybe it's I just have this innate feeling of there's something that's calling my soul. I don't know what exactly it is yet, but I know there's something else, right? But I'm afraid to leave my current path. That fear you talk about, right? That fear of actually going and exploring what their dharma is, or that fear of actually giving themselves a chance to explore it. That's also like, you're on track as well. Like, that's the next stage. So the next stage is that part where you have to make a decision. And decisions are difficult when the decisions are masked with a lot of fear around it. And my response would be, genuinely, if that is the place that you're in, that is the place that you have to navigate. And to kind of force yourself to make a decision when there's still fear to be worked through is also dangerous. So I would say, instead of like really trying to force it, because we also know, right? If anything we force does not really work, right? We create our own resistance. Why don't we sit with it? Because the fears actually have to be worked through, because dharma happens when that is taken away, when that fear is not necessarily, I'd say, eliminated, but it's so small of a voice compared to the other voice that's like, I gotta do this, right? When the calling is louder than the fear, that's when you won't even have to make a decision. You will feel no choice but to pursue your dharma. And I related back to the throat chakra, which is, I know, the initial, you know, kind of reason for us even being here, right, is to take all this and connect it to, like, how do we speak our truth, right? How do we get to that place? It's all connected, right? It's all connected. So we can't actually pursue dharma unless we have worked through all the things in place by design to prevent us from getting there.
So when you're explaining the fear, and yet the ability to reflect and sit with the fear and then go when you feel like there is no other choice, you have to do it. This is something that reminds me of my experience with starting this company, starting Field, as I feel like this is, I now recognize that I definitely am pursuing my dharma. And the science of that is that I feel so aligned, I feel happy, even when things go wrong or when things are scary.
Right.
I feel that it's all still completely right and it's all part of the experience. While comparing to where I was before, when I wasn't exactly on a path, but that even that was still part of a path, not being exactly on it, I 100%. Didn't feel this way. And yet when I needed to come to this path, I had things crashing around me. I had my previous business crashing around me. I had money crashing around me. Other relationships really getting very, very difficult. And I had to reach a point where there was no other choice but actually pursue what it is that I want to do. And I didn't need to push it. I'm sharing it to really emphasize with this fact that, yeah, sometimes we might be in a place where we know maybe we aren't doing exactly the thing we want to do. But in the moment when you need to take that next step is going to come, and you will know when it's right. And I believe then the best thing to do is just to actually follow that sign, that instinct, and not to freak out in that one very important moment.
Yeah, that's such an amazing, you know, thank you for sharing that. And it's so true. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you have just shared mirrors myself and everyone else I've ever spoken to. And it is just, it is 100% true that all of those moments where you're doing something that you realize you really don't want to do, what amazing milestones there are, like those are for your own evolution.
Yeah.
How could you really come to a place of understanding your own dharma if you haven't done other things that you know are not? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly.
It's all part of the path, including the fear. And the worst thing somebody can do for themselves is when they're in that place of fear, or they're just genuinely, they're not ready to try to force it. Because it is 100% true that when things open up, you don't really feel that you have a choice. You have to just pursue it, because it becomes so evidently clear that this is the path I want to go down, no matter what role it is, no matter what title it is. Remember, dharma is never a role. Dharma is never a title. Dharma is never monetary. Dharma is never this physical world, you know, 3D thing. Dharma is a feeling. Dharma is an energy. Dharma is something more abstract. Dharma is a connection, right? That is when, no matter what you're doing, you make a change in career, you change where you're living, something happens to shift you. And that's where the energy comes from.
Yeah. And on this note, I would indeed love to start this conversation on the throat chakra and developing your voice, because one of the most powerful sources of change, of transformation, and of growth is that connection to your truth and your voice.
Right.
And at the same time, since Feel is all about supporting women in finding that power, I am seeing and meeting lots of women and, you know, experts and teachers who work specifically with women. And among all those women, there is this one very common and repeating pattern of women just not being able to speak up, or being afraid to speak up, or being a lot in that people pleaser state, or a good girl kind of state. And as a result, really never just saying what it is that we truly want or not want. And of course, that affects all of life. So this is something I would love to learn from you about, on how to develop that voice. But let's start first with that projection, because I believe that if we understand the projection around a certain area, then it starts supporting us in finding our own way towards that subject.
Women deal with a lot of projections, and they deal with them from every angle. Like, if we really just stop to think about it, how much projection we actually do face, it's mind-blowing. Think of every various culture, every family kind of system. Think of other women and the projections that they face and then put onto each other. Think of men and all the things they face and what they put onto us, right? It is vast. It is infinite. And it has created some confusion, a lot of confusion. And I think that the most, before we dive into the specifics, I love starting with this, just this simple understanding that, number one, what it is to be a woman is simply to exist. You existing is what it is to be a woman.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Yes.
It's the core of everything. Before we dive into anything, people have to know, right? It is just you. So the way of how you should look, talk, what it means to be natural, right? A natural woman, what it means to be a divine feminine. All of these terms have associations that I really do feel have taken away from the understanding that just by existing, just by you being born in the vessel that you're in, you are a woman. And if you understand that first, like really, truly understand it and integrate that knowing, then it doesn't matter. All of these other things don't matter, right? The fear of speaking, the fear of not really knowing one's truth to then be able to speak it, all comes from confusion of like, what is my truth, right? And it's all of these things that are just put on to women. And I personally feel very protective over women in general, because we have a very important place, and we're so vital, right? Vital to this energy system. If you look back into ancient times, ancient civilizations, there were a lot of matriarchs, right? Before there were patriarchs, there was matriarchs. And that is true. That is knowledge that is out there, that is factual, that has been documented, and that has been around, right? That changed. So the matriarch society started to change. And if you think about like why, right, when and why did that change? That started to change as civilizations became more expansive and started to have competition. So it became a little bit more complex. There started to be competition between civilizations. And then came the hierarchy, right? The hierarchy within civilization started to come about. Patriarchy came in. And if we also zoom out even more and look astrologically, what was the sentiment of that era? That was a time when it did pay off to be more structured. When you're talking about advancing civilizations, which at that time, whether we agree with it or not, that's what a lot of it was. There was a lot of conquering, growing, a big identity crisis of humanity, right? And there was a lot of hierarchy put in place. And that's when being more rigid, having rules, having assignments was easier. And so patriarchy started to grow at the same time of those cultural things happening. But we're shifting. We're shifting again, right? We're shifting away from those more rigid structures where there's a role and simply a role, and people are going from community to kind of being more divided. We're going back to community now, right? We're moving back into more of a community living. We're moving back into a place, an era where the collective, right, is tapping more into their yin, you know, because yin inherently has to do with your spirituality. Yin, and I talk about yin a lot because yin is simply an energy, right? And so is yang. So if you look at the, you know, the original Chinese concept of yin and yang, yin is introspection. It's dark. It's night. It's stillness. It's, you know, connection. Yang is action, right? Yang is the opposite. So the yin and yang are energies, right? And we're coming out of a very much so yang energy, moving into more of a yin era. And that's why you see that everybody is wanting to connect more with themselves. Everybody's working on, you know, they're reaching their higher potential. Everybody is working on tapping back into their inner psychic. That's because we're moving back into a yin era. Now, that said, it's very important to understand that yin has nothing to do with women. Yang has nothing to do with men. Yin and yang are energies that have nothing to do with gender. We all have yin and yang in us. And so when we use these terminologies, right, like how women should be, or what does it mean to be a woman in her divine feminine, and what does that look like? That also inherently takes away from the understanding that a woman has yin and yang. And in order to understand your truth, it takes a lot of yin, right? Because yin is sitting with yourself, going through the emotions to then come into the understanding of what it is. And then yang is taking that insight and then like asserting it into the world. So if we're being transparent, right? Expressing truth, penetrating with your voice is a yang energy. It takes yin to understand what it is that is true for you. And it takes yin to get there, but then it takes yang to assert it, to voice it, to command it. And neither one of those two things have anything to do with making you more or less of a woman. So women are yin and yang, you know, beings, just like everybody else. We're yin and yang beings. So I think it's very important for women to understand that they have to tap into both, right? And tapping into both isn't what anybody else, what it probably looks like. You know, it's completely internal. And, you know, once we start to really strip ourselves away from the projections and understand, like, what does it mean to be a woman? Oh, it just means to be me, fully, mm-hmm. fully me.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's like a profound first insight to build upon.
Yeah.
We are taking a little break so that you can learn how to access your sexual energy and feminine power at any time, and learn to embody your most confident, beautiful, powerful self. We've gathered a community of leading teachers, tantra, embodiment, sex, love, intimacy, relationship coaches. And together with them, we create simple daily practices and rituals that you can access online on demand. Embodiment, breath, tantric practices, meditations, dance, movement, everything you need to cultivate your sexual energy and feminine power. Even 5 minutes a day make a huge difference. You can access these practices in the Feel portal at a super affordable price, from $15 to $30 per month. And believe me, this is the investment that has unbelievable huge returns for your life, love, relationships, creativity, abundance, pleasure, and so much more. Get ready to awaken your inner goddess, harness your feminine power, and radiate authenticity in every area of your life. Join the Feel portal at feelup.co/membership or find the link in this podcast feed or on our Instagram at feel_women.
No, I've had this coaching client on the feminine embodiment course. And first thing she told me, which really struck me, I was like, what? She said, I would like to become a woman. I'm like, whoa, you are a woman. Why do you want to become a woman?
Wow.
This is literally how it can be sometimes right now, because in need of so much projection and what does it mean to be a woman is out there on social media and everywhere. So women really get confused whether they are women in the first place. And this is why it's so important where you speak about this foundation, that indeed you are a woman. If you are born a woman, you are a woman. There is nothing to do or nothing to achieve for that.
Right.
While this point on yin and yang and these two energies being present in us is extraordinarily important. And with yang energy, something mm-hmm. that penetrates, something that commands, how does one get in touch with that energy if they haven't felt it in them before? Because I believe you can develop it all and connect to it all, but how?
Amazing, amazing question.
Yeah.
If you really think about, let's even, before we get to yang, let's even talk about yin. So let's say the energy that you're comfortable in, right? So for the person who has never really exercised their yang, they instead have been more in their yin. I would say, if you really think about it, being still, being in connection with yourself, reflection, going through the alchemy of emotions, all of the things that are associated with all energies and all aspects of yin, it takes a lot of yang. Because as somebody like myself who has a lot of yang energy, I've always been somebody who was kind of a mover and a shaker, and that's why I felt comfortable in my corporate life. Because corporate life has a lot to do with yang, right? And it's definitely true that women that are more comfortable with their yang energy, they do well in certain corporate settings. Now, to take it to the next level, you have to get in touch with your yin energy, right? Because yin energy gives you these insights, this intuition. You can only do as well as your intuition is, right? Because at the end of the day, your intuition is what really guides you. So for me, as somebody who is always very comfortable with their yang energy, I really needed to work on my stillness, getting in touch with my yin energy. And the way I did that was through lots of practices, right? I have done so many different practices that helped me get into an environment where now I had to just sit with all of it, all of the things that I've ever, you know, all of the habits that I wanted to break, all of this, right? A true death and rebirth, I'd say, right? When you think about a death and rebirth, when someone goes to transformation, the deconstruction is a lot of that yin, right? Diving into your yin takes deconstruction of self. It is an internal process, right? And then the reconstruction, the rebuild of your life and the habits takes a lot of yang. But remember, right, you have to first go in to go out, right? As above, so below. This is why these sayings are there for a reason, because it has to do with the cycle of these two energies. So it took a lot of discipline for me to go through the process of a deconstruction, to sit with my yin, because stillness takes a lot of discipline. Stillness takes a lot of self-control. All of these things are yang, right? It takes a lot of yang to actually dive into your yin. So for the person who thinks that they've never really exercised their yang, I would first reflect on, but have you? have you actually exercised your yang, but in different ways? Right? Because self-control takes action. It takes action to not act, right? It's the irony of the human experience. And so then once, you know, that's the first question I would have for them. You know, then from there, it's like, okay, you have this amazing opportunity to really sit with yourself and come to the understanding of what it is that is you. And that can only happen through exploration of your yin. Because again, yin is that deconstruction. It's that inwards journey. And that's why yin is connected to spirituality. And that's why women were always the oracles. That's why women were always the sages. It's because as women, we have a vessel that is built to be a channel. And so our channels are literally meant to guide us, right? We're meant to receive this intuition and then to act on it. So what is the point of having intuition if you don't act on it, right? And so another thing I wanted to share too is that your inner voice is something that it's like a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. That is true. Because if you have this inner voice that you are not acting on, then that inner voice will become more and more murky, right? It'll become harder and harder to understand what is an anxiety, what is a fear, what is an overthought versus what is that inner voice. So it's very, very key and very important to act on it. And acting on it doesn't have to be bold. Acting on it doesn't have to be, you know, making a production out of everything, right? It could be as simple as having an insight, writing it down. I mean, the act of writing it down is a yang, right? It's you getting something from outside, from inside, outside. You know, then from writing things down to then reading it out loud. From reading it out loud to then speaking in the mirror. From speaking into the mirror to then calling a friend on the phone and speaking it to them. From calling a friend on the phone to then saying it to your family member, right? It's all these micro ways to showcase yang energy and to build up your voice by acting on those insights.
I just love so much what you've just said. You're describing those small micro steps that don't have to be so huge. Even just taking it from recognizing the truth to sharing it with a friend through micro steps in between can be so powerful. So from in here, would you give another example? I just want this to sink in even more for people that it could be as easy.
It is as easy because it is always easier than we make it out to be. Always. Just like what it is to be a woman, right? It is you. It is you. Just inherently you. And inherently you is an energy system of yin and yang. And there is no way to be, you know, to be a woman. It is just you playing with your own energies. And so see where your energies are right now naturally. You know, how balanced are you? Are you more in one area than the other? Because that'll then answer a lot of things for you. So for the person who is exercising their yang, I would highly encourage just these micro steps. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel that these micro steps really come from the very, very beginning. Like the most important, just basic step is first understand what you're feeling. And that could be in the form of, well, free thought, mm-hmm. writing every single thought that comes into your mind, whether it's organized or not, writing it down, getting it out there, because that's an act, right? And make sure you write with a pen and paper. Mm-hmm. That's another thing, is that we've done all these studies with neuroscience that really show that it's completely different than when you're actually physically writing with your hand than when you're typing. So we have to go back to some old school things, right? Yeah. Writing it down. You're also doing something to your mind when you write things down. You can rewire your mind and your subconscious by writing things down over and over again. Yeah. So practice with those kind of mini ways and then just like continue to expand on it. I do think that a lot of women struggle with expression sometimes when it comes to voice because they feel they have to be really organized or a certain way. Again, it has to, everything's a projection, right? Oh, it has to come off a certain way, or it has to be at a certain level, or it has to make sense. But again, it's all because of, okay, is this a fear of how the other person will react to what you're saying? Because that's a hypothetical. Because so being in the present is really important, and knowing that you cannot predict a future outcome, that's an imagination. That's not reality. So yeah. Your fears are literally based on your imagination. Your fears are based on zero facts. That is not rational. That is not realistic, right?
Yeah.
I think that, again, when women get into their heads, right, they get into their heads and say, well, it's got to be a certain way. And again, that's because of all the projection that they must have dealt with parents or spouses or partners or colleagues or even just culture. But most important thing is first dissecting what is real and what is a projection. Because when you really do that, you realize, wow, there's a lot of projection and there's not a lot of this that is real. So yeah. that's a confidence boost in itself. That, wow, that's not real.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that. It's my choice that I continue to worry about that. So, you know, taking another thing too is when you're doing something differently for the first time, there's always going to be fear. So if we're relying on our emotions to guide us always, then we'll always wait until we're not fearful. But even how we spoke about in the very beginning, right? That if you're at a place of fear, that's actually okay. And that's actually part of the process. And actually, those are things to work through, not work against, right? You can't avoid the fear. You have to work with it.
I find it always easier for information to sink in when you have like a real life example. Thus, I want to volunteer here and really prove, like I proved to myself that very often we just have so much made up lies in our own heads that we completely imagine, and in reality, things are, again, extremely simple. When I was 20 years old, and that secret completely broke my perception of who my father is. And of course, for a girl, father, such an important figure. I was projecting him on all my relationships with men as a result. So I even when I found out that secret, I broke up with my sweetheart boyfriend who I was with for 3 years because I made a story in my head that all men are assholes and everything is a lie, whatever they say. So for 6 years, I was holding that secret just inside of me. I wasn't even open to discuss it with other people, with friends. I was just holding it in me and I didn't share it with my father either. And building on that story in my head, I was building more stories and not allowing myself to speak the truth. It was like something stuck in the body as that secret. And just once, and 6 years later, something really hit me that I had to speak it out loud and I had to speak to my father about it. To a level that I had to like not sleep for the entire night and call him at 8 a.m. in the morning, waiting for him to wake up to speak about it. And when I spoke about it with him, he just said, yeah, I know, I understand. And basically, he told me everything I needed to hear back to completely soothe me. And there was no reason whatsoever for 6 years to be so resentful and to... hate all the men and to keep it all to myself. In reality, when I just allowed myself to overcome the fear and to press, to like physically force myself into the conversation and speak the truth, I faced the reality, the real world, not imaginary world, but the real world where actually everything is okay. And so that's how far people sometimes, like myself, can go when they're afraid of just say something out loud. And I wish I knew that. Unfortunately, I didn't, but now I know. And I understand that very often just having a conversation and facing yourself. It can be very difficult, of course. And there are, I truly believe in embodiment. And at that age, when I started, when I finally spoke the truth, I already was in embodiment practices regularly. So I knew I could physically make myself connect to an emotion and speak it out loud. I could resolve that situation. So,
and can I ask, like, what is your cultural background?
I am a half Muslim country and half Soviet, so basically Kazakhstan. So of course, like in our culture, father figure is like, right, it's a god. You don't talk to him.
Even if we look at epigenetics,
yeah,
I like to think about, you know, we're carrying so much from our ancestors. We're carrying so much in our DNA, right? Our DNA is, it's a computer chip. You know, yeah, there's so much information that we actually have within us, like in our bodies, that are not even necessarily ours, that we have created from birth until now. Mm. And yeah, that's what's interesting about epigenetics, which is, you know, really is the science behind generational trauma and just generational kind of culture, right? So there's a lot of cultural things that went into your, you know, natural decision to just hold it in for 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's years and years and years and years in that, in, you know, area of the world, and, you know, with the cultures and the melting pot that's there specifically of how one behaves and how, like, the expression. So another thing to even say for women, because we're so beautifully sensitive and beautifully open channels, there's a lot that we're carrying that's not necessarily ours.
Yeah.
And but we still have to go through, like, even though it's not ours, it doesn't mean that we ignore it. It actually means we have to move through it regardless, because it's affecting us today, right? So everything that's affecting us today, whether it's ours or not ours, it is something that we have to move through.
Yeah. And very often also, the things that we carry then manifest in our bodies as a disease. I've been, or as something else, or as darkness, right, as blockage, as something that doesn't feel right. And when it comes to speaking up truth, that can be stuck and deep in our throats. And that's what I really related to the reel you published on Instagram, specifically when you were speaking about the throat chakra and the connection and the truth and opening. And in that, my experience of those 6 years, I actually had to take out my tonsils because they were like really swallowed with so much like disease and infection. I was getting tonsillitis like 3 times a year, high temperature. Had to take them out, not to continue with that. But I don't know whether I was connected to how much I hold in my throat and shut myself down. I believe it was, but that's just what it was like. So having said that, what do you see, believe, and find about the physicality of truth and openness and speaking up?
Absolutely. And it is true that everything that we store in the body energetically, emotionally, turns into something physically, everything. So there's so much we can learn about ourselves. Like everything that we need to know is quite literally within us. And I know that a lot of people say that and we hear that all the time, but when we actually really do dissect that, it's true. So even in those ailments and those things in, there's all these things that you can look to see. Okay, well, I know that fear, long-term fear, is connected to the kidneys, right? So those with kidney disease, they typically, like, we have done the studies on this. Also, Chinese medicine is very much so about this. So that's why acupuncture is very important. And all of Chinese medicine has to do with, like, let's look at the yin-yang energies within each organ and see from there how, you know, how is that affecting your actual health? You know, but when we go back to the throat chakra, I always talk about the throat chakra because it is the chakra that opens up and harmonizes once all the others are in more of a balanced setting as well. Because again, we cannot isolate one point when we are ourselves. We are an energy system. So think of yourself like an infinity symbol. I always think of life as an infinity symbol because everything is an infinity symbol, meaning There's yin, there's yang, there's all these energies. There's give, there's take, right? Everything is this reciprocal energy system. That's us. And that's all of our chakra. You know, we're one energy system where if one is blocked, and that's going to be related to other places that are blocked, right? So again, how can one speak truth if they don't feel safe within themselves, like the root chakra? How can one speak truth if they're closed off emotionally, right? How can one speak truth if they haven't really allowed themselves to receive, you know, receive pleasure, receive love? How can one speak truth if they haven't practiced asserting themselves or believe in themselves and their willpower, right? How can one speak truth if they haven't allowed themselves to even listen to their intuition, like their crown chakra? So all of it's connected. And so the good news is it's a journey, and we're all working on it, and we're all walking the path. And the good news is, as you just come into balance within yourself as who you are, it does open up, right? It opens up naturally as you learn more about who you are. And the only way to do that is by deconstruction of self, deconstructing yourself to then reconstruct. And it's very natural, right? When you naturally deconstruct, go within yourself, right, and break down, understand certain parts of yourself, when you naturally go through that process, you naturally build back up, right? So it's not as arduous of a journey as it may sound, right? Okay, deconstruction, reconstruction, right? Really, it just takes diving into your yin is the precipice for your throat chakra. Diving into yourself is the precipice for your throat chakra. So, you know, you're a lot more advanced no matter where you are in space and time in your journey. You're always more advanced than you think you are. It just has to do with eliminating some of these projections and beliefs and cultural kind of norms that, again, aren't real, you know, or don't matter at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what really matters is your journey within self, because from there comes the realization of everything, including Dharma.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that really means everyone, regardless of their background, in where they are in life, they can always step into the path of towards real fulfillment, really regardless. And how does, just I guess one of my final questions would be, because we spoke so much about the deconstruction and reconstruction, for some people it might be a little too abstract. Well, it actually is abstract, and this is how it is, because everyone has different journeys. But I wonder if you would perhaps describe a process of how one could, if they feel like, well, I really want to progress, I want to grow, I want to live a more fulfilling life, and I want to know, where can I go? How can I learn? How can I come back to that space where I can recreate and rebuild myself? I guess there are so many tools out there that people could use, but with the overwhelm of that information also comes,
right?
Yeah, people are losing themselves in the overwhelm of information. What is the actual, real, simple way to get there?
Right. Absolutely. There are so many things out there right now. One of the beautiful things, right, one of the beautiful byproducts of the age of Aquarius and where we are in this yin era that we're walking into, is that a lot of people are wanting to connect with their deeper selves, is that a lot of people are wanting to connect with a, you know, a spirituality or a faith system that resonates with them. That's a beautiful thing. One of the downsides, though, is that, again, there's a lot of projection even within that, right? Here's how to do this. Here's how to do that. Here's how to be spiritual. Here's how to, you know, here's how to manifest. There's a lot of saturation out there. I mean, when I go on my own, you know, social media accounts and I just scroll for 5 minutes, it's too much for me. It's too much, you know, and it's a lot of people telling you what to do. And the reality is, do we learn from people simply telling us what to do? I think that what someone can share can help activate you, right? We get activated by the things that we consume, you know, the people that we're around, the words that we listen to, the podcasts that we hear, the movies. We get activated by it, but we don't learn until we take that activation, apply it within ourselves, and then exercise it. And that is the process. That is the human experience. That is the whole journey. So I talk a lot about deconstruction, reconstruction. You know, another way to say it is like a death and rebirth experience. I talk a lot about that, and I talk a lot about the phoenix. So a phoenix is a symbol of death and rebirth. It's a symbol of transformation. So when I think about the path of the phoenix, which is the path of somebody just walking through the human experience, working on themselves, right? I think of it in depending on where everyone is, the very first beginning is, are you fed up, right? I think it all starts with the place of someone's frustrated they're at a place in time where they're frustrated or they feel stuck and they're like, okay, there are things that need to change. I am ready for X. I am ready to Y. I'm ready to speak my truth. I'm ready to work on my throat chakra. I'm ready to work on opening up my heart. I'm ready to work on X, right? And it then from there, you always have to kind of back into it. What are the habits, the defense mechanisms that you have? You may not know that answer. That's the thing, is that you may not know exactly all of the things that you're going to work on are, because that's also what, as you say, work on a father wound, other things come up, right? Other things come up that are related that you don't even know. I'll give you an example. In my life, and one of the things that I've worked on, a theme, because everybody has various themes, right? One of my themes was what I call the savior complex. So the savior complex is very common. Anyone who's like a coach or a therapist or a teacher or, you know, or a mother archetype, father archetype, people that really want to help the world typically have a savior complex, right? It's a beautiful thing. There's always a beautiful side to everything. The beautiful side of it is that you are the first person to be the leader. If you're in a group and we need to do something, you're the first person to help a friend, right? You're the one your friends call for advice. You're the one that people, you know, want it on their team. And therefore that feels great. You get to help people, you get to protect, you get to lead, you get to do all these things. And that's the beautiful aspect of it. The downside is that those people with the savior complex, or, you know, the teacher, the therapist, the mother archetype, right? They're the ones that typically feel that they don't necessarily have as much of a sounding board as they should. Or they don't recognize that they need a sounding board too, right? And so they themselves need to kind of let go. So the savior complex, when I started to break mine down, yeah, I actually like got down to two core, you know, kind of root symptoms. One was self-worth, which is very, very surprising to me. And I'll go into why. But the other one was control. So I broke down that the savior complex stems from self-worth and control. Control makes sense because control has to do with, you know, well, I want to create an environment where I'm mitigating harm for people. You know, I'm mitigating chaos. So I want to make sure that nothing happens, everybody's fine. So I want to, like, you know, it's not control because I want control. It's just control because you don't want things to go awry, right? And so that makes sense, that there's a control kind of factor that you have to break down with yourself. You have to get comfortable with complete lack of control, knowing that things are going to be fine. You have to let go. You have to let go, let go, let go, let go, right? Let go of control. It's okay. You actually don't have to be the one to rise up every time. You don't have to do that, right? Everything will be fine. So that makes sense. That's like a more understandable. But now we go to self-worth. I've always been somebody who, I never actually had what you would probably look at like, you know, traditional or like superficial version of what you would think you know, self-worth issues manifested like, right? Like I never had what traditionally one would see as self-worth issues, right? I always had high self-esteem. I was always confident. I was always fine with a group of people. So that never connected for me. But then the more I kept thinking about and breaking down my own savior complex, I started to realize and think about, hey, why is it that when I'm in a group, I feel that I have to go above and beyond and take care of everybody? Right? Why is it that if I'm in a relationship, I'm going above and beyond and I'm, you know, making all these amazing experiences? And so why is it that you're having to go above and beyond? Why is it that you're having to be a savior? Who deemed you as that? Right? And I know where it came from, right? My savior complex came from the fact that my sister had a lot of medical conditions and we were in and out of the hospital. And my mother was, you know, very sensitive and very emotional. And my father was very quiet and not expressive. And I really went from being the youngest child to the oldest child and really taking care of the family. So I know where my savior complex came from and how that translated later in my life. Why is it that I felt that need, right, to do that going on into later years of my life in every setting? And so it came down to, when you're helping people, it feels good, right? And I needed to realize that I don't have to do anything to be loved. I don't have to help. I just have to exist. It's so interesting, right? Because you're taught like, hey, you are a good person if you do this. You are a good person if you do that. But you're also a good human just for being a good human, right? Like if you're not harming anyone, you're a good human, right? You don't have to give away everything you have in order to be a good human. Know that you're a good human. So that was an interesting period of my life of reflection. To just realize, like, I don't have to go above and beyond to be lovable. I can just be, I can just exist, and I am lovable, right? So the savior complex, or folks with the savior complex, really go through that. And different themes have other associations, right? Abandonment is another theme that a lot of people go through in life, and that has different associations. But at the end of the day, it's all the same, right? Like just understanding that we really are enough, and that the more we strip ourselves down and realize that, that's when the start of everything happens. It's like the more, it takes a lot of work to get to the simple realization that, wow, who I am is actually who I'm meant to be. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to grow. We're going to continue to grow, but you're going to continue to just be more of who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. In the end of the day, indeed, that's what I also keep learning every single day through the work on myself and with other people is really, it's all about, as you say, deconstructing, just really going back to basics, to the essence. And yep. Something that is so difficult to do in the society that tells us do more. While this is just the most beautiful beginning of a path, and thank you so much for really covering it in this podcast. And I would love to also hear about what is it that you're building, because I saw you're launching a new project as well right now. So tell us about it.
Absolutely. So I have a passion, a devotion to the human experience, which really is the path of the phoenix, which is just continual deconstruction, reconstruction. And it's just such a beautiful experience. I think that being a human, being here, is just such a divinely beautiful experience. And it's an honor. It's an honor for us all to be here with each other going through this. No matter how we look like, no matter what conditions we were born into, no matter what circumstances we're experiencing, no matter what our goals or milestones are in our mind, it doesn't matter. None of it matters, right? At the end of the day, we should be supporting each other and really knowing that at the end of everything, the only thing that really matters is our connection to ourself, because that connection to self is the same thing as connection to other. There's no difference between ourselves and from another. So the more you understand about yourself, the more you actually feel connected to everyone, right? So self-improvement or this work is not selfish. It is for the greater good. And so what I'm working on really has to do with all those things. There is a company that I have called Our Highest Mantra. And Our Highest Mantra has to do with everybody who is on the path of the Phoenix. So it's a social club for anyone who is exploring, who is going through a death and rebirth experience, any of it. And it's a community. So there's community components to it. There is some educational aspects of it where I have literature and things I've worked on that really just define yin, really just define yang, really helps to clarify all sorts of language. And it's really centered around universal experience. Because when you look at every faith system, every single religion, or even science, or even philosophy, everything goes back to deconstruction, reconstruction, the cycle of life. So that's Our Highest Mantra, which is like a passion of mine. I have another company that I'm launching as well, which is called Piruz. So Piruz means to win. It means victorious. And that actually has to do with health and wellness, because I know from my own personal journey and having worked with thousands of people across the globe who are transforming, there is no separation between your mental aspect, your emotional aspect, your physical aspect, and your energetic aspect. When you're evolving as a person, you're evolving in all ways. So, you know, your thoughts are changing, which was going to change your emotions, how you regulate your emotions, which changes how your body feels, how your body looks, what your body craves, right? To everything. So Piruz is actually a health and wellness company where we have all biologically available products. We have genetic testing services and all sorts of educational material from various experts across various modalities, all about health. Well, this is an absolutely beautiful organization that you've created and a wonderful space, and really, really happy to be on here. Thank you for inviting me into your world and sharing some of my energy so that we can create together. Really look forward to everything that happens with this podcast, with this company, and happy to help advance each other, because we need more collaboration between women, you know, as female founders. I mean, it's so important because we do go through a lot of exercises to get to where we are. And it's just such a beautiful thing to be able to be here, to have created something, and then to help further each other. So
that was Sathi Roy. I hope this episode inspires you to live your truth and have the life you truly desire, because everything is possible and the power to create love, abundance, and value is within all of us. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You can find Sathi's profile in this episode notes and discover the offerings of her extraordinary companies, Our Highest Mantra and Piruz. If you have any feedback or insights you'd like to share, feel free to reach out to me on any social media channels or within our field group for women, or of course, our membership. Thank you so much for listening to the Feminine Power Podcast. I'm your host, Maria Greenina.